Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Nicholas Freudenberg, who's a distinguished professor of public health at City University of New York and Hunter College, and the author of a new book, Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nicholas Freudenberg.
Thanks for having me.
And clearly, with these hearings that just took place on Capitol Hill, with the new head of General Motors being raked over the coals, largely by Republican congressmen who have up until now not proven themselves to be great stewards of public health and certainly great watchdogs of corporate America. So let's start with that. I mean, for all the posturing, there's no question that GM, at least 12 people died for a part that cost a dollar. And so many of these people that died were young teenage women, from what I can tell. There's no question that's an abomination. But what was your sense of the theater on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think theater is the right word. That it seems to be the damage control advice of the day. When you have a problem like this, you apologize profusely and say things will be different in the future. But you do that after the problem is revealed to the public, not when you first know about it. And I think the underlying problem is really our government's ambivalence about regulation. And I think the intent of the regulatory legislation for both the auto safety industry passed in 1966, but also we could look at regulation of the food industry and other industries, was to protect public health. But I think increasingly, especially after the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980 and his dictum that government was the problem, not the solution, there's been a notion that regulators ought to compromise between protecting public health and protecting profit. And that's really a recipe for disaster. And I think we're seeing one more example of that disaster in the latest General Motors story.
But I'm in referring, though, as I did to the congressmen, the Republicans in particular, who were scolding the new head of GM. My sense is that these people were being absolute abject hypocrites because they are the big deregulators. That's their mantra.
Exactly. They're reaping what they've sown in a very tragic way. And I think for example, the National Highway Safety and Transportation Administration, which is the government agency known as NHTSA that is responsible for enforcing these laws, got 10% less than they'd asked for in fiscal year 2014. So the time to have insisted on this was when funding requests came up for these agencies. And in addition, The Congress, and particularly the Republican majority in the House of Representatives, has been systematically reducing funding for regulation. And inevitably, that will lead to preventable deaths and preventable illnesses.
So, Nicholas Freudenberg, in your new book, Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health, you talk about a corporate consumption complex. Obviously, we've heard of the military-industrial complex, the prison-industrial complex, the intelligence-industrial complex. Now we have the corporate consumption complex. So explain it.
Sure. I'm proposing that that's the network of consumer corporations, multinational global consumer corporations, their trade associations, their the banks and investment funds that provide financing, the advertising agencies, and the elected officials, scientists, and journalists they pay for. And the argument I make in the book is that this corporate consumption complex promotes what I call hyperconsumption, health habits, lifestyles that put people at risk of premature death, preventable illness, and injury. And they promote hyperconsumption because that increases their bottom line, increases their profits, but at the expense of well-being. And the most serious health problems facing this nation today are chronic diseases and injuries. And in large part, I argue in the book, that these health problems that are putting such a stress and our health care system are the result of the business and political practices of the corporate consumption complex. The specific industries I profile in my book are the alcohol industry, the food industry, the automobile industry, the firearm industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and the tobacco industry.
Again, I'm speaking with Nicholas Freudenberg, who's a distinguished professor of public health at City University of New York and Hunter College, and the author of the new book, Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health. Well, coincidentally, Nicholas, preceding you on today's program is the head of Public Citizen, Robert Weissman. We're talking about the latest Supreme Court decision eviscerating what's left of campaign finance rules in this country. And, of course, Public Citizen was founded, ironically, by General Motors, in as much as they went after the messenger, who was an obscure consumer crusader named Ralph Nader, who in 1965 published a book, Unsafe at Any Speed. And rather than address the problem with the Chevrolet Corvair, General Motors sicked a bunch of private detectives and tried to, you know, kill the messenger, if you will. In Ralph Nader, he was able to sue and get an enormous penalty out of General Motors, which he then invested in Public Citizen, which is surviving to this day and doing important work. And in the conversation preceding this one, we talked about the idea that the Supreme Court is now controlled by a majority of conservatives and corporatists who are empowering millionaires and billionaires at the expense of ordinary citizens. But it seems to me the same contempt, if you accept that idea, that in effect this ruling McCutcheon indicates a kind of contempt for the average American because they think that rich people have more rights than ordinary people. If there is that same contempt for citizens, it would seem the logical extension would be that there's the same contempt for consumers.
Yes, and I think it's striking that how similar the facts of GM's current problems with the Cobalt are to the problems in 1965 with the Corvair that Ralph Nader exposed. And you wonder what GM has learned from that incident, or maybe you wonder about the ground rules that enable corporations to put profit above human life. But I think the lesson that I take from the book, where I look at, you know, really the last century of activism around public health, is that there have been periods in U.S. history where social movements and reformers and health professionals and researchers have joined together to really change the balance of power between the public sector and government and between corporations. And I think we're now beginning in the mid-1970s. I talk about the much-discussed Powell memo that really laid out an agenda for business to win back the rights that Ralph Nader and others had won through consumer legislation and environmental protection. And I think we're seeing what I hope will be the tail end of that pendulum swing of business, you know, winning influence in our political system, on the Supreme Court, as you said, in Congress, and that by looking for the links between people working to improve our food supply, to improve the safety of our autos, to further reduce promotion of tobacco, we can create a social movement for health and equity that will be able to redraw these balances between government and market.
But of course, Nicholas Freudenberg, when the Supreme Court makes these reactionary rulings, as they've done with McCutcheon, it makes it so much more difficult to overturn it. In the case of Citizens United and McCutcheon, you now need a constitutional amendment, which is a big, heavy lift. And
yes, but the lesson, the counterexample I cite, is that the Supreme Court and the federal courts follow rather than lead public opinion. And some of the recent decisions on gay marriage, I think, show that mobilizing and organizing changes the nature of the debate. And it might unfortunately take a decade or two decades, but the history of this country is people joining together and changing those ground rules. So that has to be the priority for today, difficult as it seems, you know, at this moment in time, especially around the Supreme Court, which is so pro-corporate in its leanings.
So, Nicholas Freudenberg, let's get into that, the corporate culture that you talk about, that would basically save the corporation $1, knowing that there's a defective ignition switch on an automobile that they're producing and have produced for decades that has killed at least 12 people. You know, we're talking about $12 for, you know, equals 12 lives. It's pretty hard to swallow, but there is a sort of a banality of evil here. You know, you've got the obvious fact that since Nader, the vehicle death rate in the United States has fallen from 25.9 per 100,000 people in 1966 to 10.8 per 100,000 in 2012. And so we know that NADERs and safety has saved lives, and if there was more focus on it, there'd be more lives saved. But
correct. And we also know that other countries have achieved much have achieved even bigger reductions. And so we know that if we were to make it a priority, we could do much better than we've done, even better.
Well, excuse me. Well, I have a friend who worked for General Motors for quite a while, and he was telling me that the corporate culture is such that the engineers don't have much clout, whereas the accountants do. And the bean counters in headquarters have the real power. And that even out at the test track, when they're testing automobiles, the engineers are kind of told in a kind of wink and a nod, you know, to pass it. So don't cause us any trouble, don't cause us any delays, don't cause us any more costs. Just have the vehicle pass the test. What explains that kind of corporate culture? I imagine it's pretty simple, right? If you rock the boat, you lose your job.
And I think in Lethal But Legal, I discuss some of the changes in the global economy that have contributed to this mentality. One is certainly short-termism, you know, the notion that corporate managers need to bring returns on investment not just over the long run, but every quarter, every year. And that really creates a climate and culture of not wanting to find out if there's a problem because you might lose your job before that happens. And I think also the consolidation of so many industries, including the automobile industry, means there's less competition and therefore less paying attention to the areas that might make a difference, and also more money as there are fewer bigger corporations to spend on advertising and product development rather than focusing on safety. But I think where there are governments that insist that it's their responsibility and mandate to protect public health, then industry wouldn't be allowed to get away with these things. So we need to be working on a few different fronts, but including those, really restoring the visible hand of government in our public life, that only government has the mandate and the authority and the resources to protect public health. And when Congress or other government bodies undermine that mandate and don't provide the resources to allow it to do it, then we see preventable deaths, as in this GM case.
Well, of course, the irony is, of course, now is that Mary Barra of GM, who was apologizing profusely to the Congress, who were grandstanding and were a bunch of hypocrites, at least to my mind, the Republicans certainly were. Nevertheless, it's pretty clear, isn't it, that this saving $12 or $13 costing the lives of those mostly young teenage drivers is going to cost them an awful lot more in the long run, and I imagine it's not doing their product line much good after they've been bailed out by the government, and they appear to have made something of a turnaround, and she herself is being used as a kind of symbol of corporate modernization, at least in terms of the boardroom. So
yes, and this isn't the first time that we've seen this short-sightedness on the part of the automobile industry. They're putting all their eggs in the sports utility vehicle basket in the late 1990s, a vehicle that was far more profitable, 10 to 12 times as profitable as sedans, but far more dangerous, far more polluting. And yet they promoted them heavily. They spent, the big three spent $9 billion advertising SUVs in the late 1990s. And as they became to dominate the market and as gasoline prices went up, that market collapsed. And their poor judgment in putting all their investment in the profitable but not sustainable SUVs really led to the need for this government bailout during the economic crisis. So it's not the first time that they've made short-sighted calculations. And part of the reason they continue to be able to do that is that too often our government and our society allows corporations to externalize the costs of their mistakes, to charge them to the victims of those conditions or to taxpayers or to the government. And we need to be looking for policy levers that will allow us to return those costs to the producer of them. And we've seen, at least here in the United States, that forcing the tobacco industry to compensate states for caring for the for people with tobacco-related illnesses served as a warning message and helped the federal government win authority to regulate tobacco more closely. So we need to see that same returning costs. Another strategy that I think is important is to hold corporate executives criminally liable when they deliberately withhold information from regulatory agencies, and those and that withholding results in injuries and deaths. That it's not enough simply to fine them, but in anybody else who took an action that led to injury or death knowingly would be prosecuted for that, and we need to see that happen with corporations as well.
Well, just in closing, Nicholas Freudenberg, there is out here in California a new car maker, Elon Musk, and his Tesla wins all of the prizes by reviewers as the best car on the road, and it's made in California. It's a whole different business plan. They don't have dealerships, etc. He's brought an awful lot of new thinking to the whole automobile world, not the least of which, of course, that the car doesn't pollute. It's an electric car. And mind you, the cost of the batteries is really what is making it prohibitive, but they say that eventually they'll bring those down. But do you think he's going to survive? In other words, if these people can't cure themselves, will the marketplace cure them by turning them into the dinosaurs that they are?
Well, I'm not confident that the marketplace by itself is the solution. And certainly, I think we need better models of cars. We need, you know, hybrid and electric and other kinds of cars. But the real solution, both for economic reasons and particularly for environmental and sustainability reasons, is to develop much more robust public transportation systems. And that requires a publicly supported infrastructure. And many other countries have invested in a public transportation system. It brings benefits to business. It brings benefits to the population. It has health and environmental benefits. So I think the challenge of this part of the 21st century is really to restore a public role in protecting the commons and in coming up with decisions that have as their primary goal improving human well-being, not enhancing corporate profitability. And we have a ways to go to achieve such a political system.
Well, Nicholas Freudenberg, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Again, I've been speaking with Nicholas Freudenberg, who's a distinguished professor of public health at City University of New York and Hunter College, and the author of the new book, Lethal But Legal, Corporations, Consumption, and Protecting Public Health. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back and go to Israel to look into the inclusion of Jonathan Pollard as a bargaining chip in the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations.